evening, everybody. This is the Michael Cutler Hour, and thank you for joining us. Michael Cutler is out tonight on important business, but Jill Trammell and myself, Tom Garcia, are filling in for him tonight. Jill, how are you doing tonight? Okay, that's not Jill. We've got a caller. It's probably one of our guests. Who just called in?
You've got Debbie Lee.
Debbie, all right, thank you. I don't know what happened to Jill. Maybe she got confused on the phone number, but hey, let's just call her because I have Jill's phone number.
We could do that, right?
Yeah, I'm just going to call out directly to Jill, but I've got to look her phone number up right here. Here we go. Okay, stand by while I give her a call. I sent her this phone number that you just called in on, but she was supposed to call in on the host number. So should I tell everybody what the phone number is I'm dialing, her cell phone?
And I am on a tour bus traveling across the country, so if you lose me, I will call back in.
Okay. Are you touring with Lloyd Marcus right now?
Yes, I am.
Oh, Lloyd's a good friend of ours. We've had him on the show several times. Let's
see
if...
I'm sitting right next to him on the bus. Not this moment.
Well,
don't
Tom Garcia says hi.
Don't Tom Garcia says hi.
All right. We'll see if she picks up. If she doesn't, well, then we'll just move on with the show. But I know she specifically wanted to get you on the show tonight. And Jill is always a busy person. And she was emailing me several times.
Get back to you as soon as possible.
Okay. Well, she didn't pick up. All right. Well, we'll just see if she calls in at some point. But I just wanted to point out a couple things about, let's see. Well, now I don't have it. Well, first of all, Debbie, tell us why Jill wanted you to come on the show. And then I'm going to do some plugs for Michael Cutler and his show. Go ahead.
You
tell
bet.
Us why.
I am actually on my 10th or 11th cross-country tour. This time I'm doing with Tea Party Express. We've done several of those tours. This is Tea Party Express number 6. My son, Mark Allen Lee, was the first Navy SEAL that was killed in Iraq on August 2nd, 2006. And that young man willingly gave up his life to save his teammates for this country, for the freedoms that we enjoy each and every day. And he took off his boots, laid down the baton, and I pick them up and carry on in his memory and make sure that our troops are honored and loved and taken care of, that the families of the fallen are taken care of. And there isn't anything I wouldn't do for them. I founded America's Mighty Warriors in response to his last letter home. And, I'm sorry, it's a little noisy. I'm trying to find the door to close back here where I'm at.
That's okay. Understandable. Well, God bless you and God bless your son for his service to the country. He gave the ultimate sacrifice, and there's no way we can ever repay that. But we have great men and women serving in the military that know that that may happen, and yet they still want to serve and they take on that responsibility. So that's fantastic.
The day that he died, it was 115, 120 degrees over in Ramadi, Iraq, and there were four of the SEALs that were on the rooftop. And his buddy Ryan had been severely injured. They could tell by looking at him, it didn't look good. They didn't know if he would survive the next few moments. Two of the SEALs dropped to their knees to help Ryan. And Mark could have done the very same thing, but he made the choice to stand up into the direct line of fire, hoping the enemy would fire on him and they could sneak the medic up to the roof. And they got the medic up there. He took one look at Ryan and said, we've got to get him out of here immediately or there's no chance for survival. So not once, but a second time, then Mark stood up in the direct line of fire to provide the cover so they could get down off the roof. It was 115, 120 degrees that day. They'd been in a two-hour intense firefight. I can't even begin to imagine what that's like. And he carried the big gun, so he carried anywhere from 150 to 180 pounds in addition to his own weight. And they got down off that roof. They sent Ryan off for medical attention, and they climbed in their Bradleys and headed back to the base. And, you know, we've watched our Navy SEALs do some pretty amazing things. And they seem superhuman at times, but I can tell you they're just as human as you or I. And that's my adopted boys now, and his teammates were. And I know they had to be exhausted emotionally, physically, and they got back to the base, and they stripped off their gear and got some water to refresh themselves. And the chief came in and said, we just found 30 insurgents that just attacked us. Mark looked at his chief, and he said, roger that, let's go get them. So they climbed in their Bradleys and went back to Ramadi and cleared several houses, went in the last house Mark would be in, and cleared the bottom of the house, started to proceed up the steps. They heard Mark yell, on me. And the guys knew that meant he was going to take the lead and they were to follow. They went up that steps, they do fire through a window until the last and final time. Mark made the choice to turn into that line of fire again. He gave his life so his teammates could live. I've been over to Iraq twice. I've seen the area. He could have stayed below the wall. He could have waited for backup. You know, he'd have lost most of his platoon, but that was a young man willingly gave his life, and that's why I'm so adamant about making sure that as we watch our country and our freedoms being taken away from us on a daily basis, that's not what Mark died for. That's not the country that he gave his life for. And I'm adamant about making sure that we, you know, get someone elected different this time who is a sincere, a real commander-in-chief to our troops.
Absolutely. Well, you know, one thing I have to say about Navy SEALs is what a tough training program they have to go through just to get the job, just to prove that they're able and capable of doing that job. And then, as you just described, that's why they've got to be so physically capable, so that they can go out and do those superhuman feats and fight in the way they do. It's amazing. It's amazing. They're physicals, amazing physical specimens. And then on top of that, look what a wonderful moral and, just genuine great human being they are on top of that. And they're smart. They're really, really smart guys. I served in the Navy, but I wasn't a SEAL, but I watched those guys train and train and train. And I'll tell you what, if I were ever in a tough spot somewhere, anywhere, I'd want to have a Navy SEAL next to me.
Talk about the
safest place in the world being next to a Navy SEAL.
Yep. And 80% of them don't make it through, the BUDS training that they go through. And, you know, some people have said to me before, oh, yeah, they're just the big gorilla guys that go in. I'm like, no, these are smart guys. Most of them have college degrees when they even went in. But some of the stuff they do just with the tanks, and, I mean, it's basically you have to be a physicist to know how much to mix, of the air and the what's in the tanks. And there's a science. Like you said, these are smart men. And one of the other things I do is work with Move America Forward, and they're one of the largest grassroots support group organizations out there, and we have a PAC. In this last election cycle, I went out and we vetted 15 different candidates who served in Iraq and Afghanistan that were conservative, and we got 13 of those men in office, and they're up serving on the Hill today. Like you said, there isn't anything I wouldn't do for our troops, for their families. I founded America's Mighty Warriors in response to Mark's last letter home. And his name, Mark, meant mighty warrior, and he definitely lived up to his name. But it's not just about Mark. It's about each and every one of our men and women who served and who sacrificed, given so much for those freedoms. And I have a house in Arizona that's called the Heroes Hope Home, where other Gold Star families can come. They get to stay free for the week, and they just get pampered and loved on. We let them know we've not forgotten their sacrifice. They've given their very best. I do a lot with the Wounded Warriors, but, there are so many other organizations that do great things for our Wounded Warriors. And you pass them on the street, and oftentimes it's obvious. They're missing a limb. They've lost their vision. They've got scars, and we can tell those scars go deep. But to pass me or any other Gold Star family member on the street, you would have no clue the depth of the pain and the scars and sacrifice that we've made for our freedoms. I've given my very best for this nation, and so that's why a lot, the majority of some of the things that I do for the families are the Gold Star families. The Heroes Hope Home, when they come, they get gift baskets, and they have flowers and chocolates and balloons, gift certificates for manicures and pedicures and massages and sporting events, and we just pamper them and let them know we have not forgotten your sacrifice. We're doing a camp in August in Dallas for 300 of our Gold Star family members, same thing, just to take care of them, love them, give them hope, and let them know we have not forgotten.
Yeah. Well, now, where can people go to find more about your organization that you've put together?
They can go to the website, and that's americasmightywarriors.org. And there's lots of videos of Mark and different things that we've done. Unfortunately, I've been hacked into recently, and our store is down, but typically we have several books that I'm a contributing author to, and Mark's Challenge Coin and Patch, and people can write to me, if they're interested in those things, and I can, explain to them what those are. Hopefully, I'll find somebody that can help me get that restored, because I'm having problems with my web people getting that back done. But and then I am on the tour bus right now for Tea Party Express, and They can go to tfartexpress.org and see our tour route. Today was day one, and we're in Ohio, and we'll be going through the middle section of our country, and then we'll be doing another tour in June and another one in September, I believe. But they can go find all that information, and I'm blessed to be able to do the military tribute. So when they come out to the rallies, they will hear me thank and honor our men and women who served and sacrificed, tell Mark's story, and then encourage others to not waste the sacrifice that our military has made for our freedoms, and get out there and vote and make a difference and educate yourself and, you know, take others with you to the polls.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, I've got a question for you, and I'm going to ask a question now, then let me plug Michael Cutler's stuff, and then I've got some. Michael Cutler is a 30-year retired INS agent, and he focuses on border security, national security, immigration issues, and does a fantastic job. I've learned so much from him, and he's got his own TV show now. But the question I'm going to pose to you, and then we'll come back to it, is today in Fort Stewart, the President of the United States, in addressing our troops there, said, "I've got your back." Now, I want your thoughts on that in a moment. I've got my thoughts, believe me, but he said, "I've got your back." Now, so we'll come back to that in just a second, but Michael Cutler wanted me to let people know that he is a senior fellow, the senior editor and senior fellow at CAPS, Californians for Population Stabilization, and that website is CAPS, C-A-P-S, web.org, CAPSweb.org, and he's got a slew of fantastic articles there. His own website, in addition, is michaelcutler.net, michaelcutler.net. And he's also doing a weekly TV show for And Magazine. Of course, you go online to watch that. It's and you can go directly to his page, his website for And Magazine. It's talkborder.com, talkborder.com. So his latest show is there right now. Anybody can go look at it, and he focuses on the Supreme Court ruling on Arizona's immigration law, the one entitled SB 1070, so you don't want to miss that. He does a fantastic job. He's going to tell you things about immigration and the effect on immigration, both legal and illegal, on our country, on our debt, on our economy, on jobs, and on individuals and people here, and he's testified before Congress I don't know how many dozens of times and been on radio and TV shows over and over and over the last several years. So he is well-versed and got his act together and really knows what he's talking about, and you'll be amazed at that stuff. So in any case, Debbie, back to you. Obama said to the troops, "I've got your back." Now, what do you think of that statement? Uh-oh, maybe we lost her. You still there, Debbie? All right, well, she's on the Tea Party Express tour bus, and she did say that she here. Might – there you are. Yeah, you maybe yep. We're cutting out. I'm still showing you on here, but so what do you think of that statement from our president to the troops that he's got their back? "I've got your back," to quote him.
I am so fed up with the man. I'm so sick and tired of the lies that spew out of his mouth. We see him make comments like this. We see him send his wife and Jill Biden out on the, you know, supposedly their campaign of trying to raise awareness and support our military and support their families. And it is nothing but a campaign for votes for him, because we watch what he does with his actions. He doesn't give them rules of engagement that let them successfully complete their mission. He cuts their budget. He increases their benefits, so what they have to pay for their military health care. Most of their equipment is 25 to 30 years old. That man does not support our troops. And I am just, it infuriates me to hear that come out of his mouth, "We've got your back." I have, Mark died when President Bush was in. I met with the man, my congressman. I raised my kids up in Oregon. I live in Arizona now, but my congressman from Oregon had attended Mark's memorial service, and afterward, I had talked about how proud I was of President Bush, that, you know, I do know the price. I know that freedom is not free now. And I still believe we're doing it. I still felt it was the right thing to do. And my Congressman Greg Walden asked me then about 3 weeks later to write a letter to President Bush and to tell him those things. And because I had said, well, maybe someday, because of Mark's sacrifice, I'll get to meet the president. And so I wrote a letter, and it was actually on 9/11. In 2006 that I wrote that letter, and I remembered back to the you know, original 9/11. My oldest son was in the Marines. My son-in-law was in the Army. Mark was Navy. I had a brother in the Air Force. I could see the handwriting on the wall. I knew I was going to have a loved one deployed. I just didn't know how deep a price that we would pay for our freedom. And as I wrote this letter and talked about that day, what I remembered, just an amazing letter that, you know, came from God, because when you're in the beginning of grief, your brain is mush. You can't write to your best friend, let alone the president. But Greg Walden hand-delivered that on Wednesday, September 13th. That very same evening, President Bush sat down and wrote me a handwritten letter, and it was filled with compassion. He talked about Mark. He said, "I'm sorry. I wish I would have met him. He sounds like a great warrior, but you gave me an amazing introduction." He said, "I would be honored to meet you." The first time that I met him, we were told we had 5 minutes with him. He spent 35 minutes with us. There was no one in the room, no Secret Service, no photographer. It was just my son, his wife, and myself. And he not once looked at his watch or acted like he was in a hurry. And we'd seen his agenda published in the newspaper. We knew he had to catch a flight and be right out of there after that event. I wrote a letter to President Obama in January when he took office. I'd just been down at Gitmo. I was adamant about keeping Gitmo open. And the second thing he wanted to do is Mexico City's policy, which pays help, you know, take some of our tax dollars to pay for abortions overseas. I don't want to pay for abortion anywhere, you know, definitely not overseas. And I wrote this letter that talked about Mark and the sacrifice he'd made. I found out 2 weeks after I was divorced that I was pregnant with Mark. And I had people encourage me to have an abortion. I had two little kids. They said, "How are you going to feed a third one?" And amazing letter that tied those things together. Sent that in January, didn't hear anything in February. March, I contacted McCain's office to see if he could arrange a meeting, and they weren't able to successfully do that, but a week later, I got a call from the White House, and one of the aides said, "We understand that you want to meet with President Obama." I said, "Yes, I do. My son was the first Navy SEAL," and he said, "Stop right there." So, wow, that was a little rude. And then I realized he was emotionally choked up. He said, "I know who you are. I know what you do. I met your son in Ramadi. I will get you an appointment with the president." The appointment was scheduled for March. Then it was postponed till April. April, they wrote and said, "The president wants to know what you want to speak to him about so he can be prepared." And of course, my thoughts, I thought, oh my gosh, if you'd have read the letter I sent you, you'd know what I, you know, want to speak to you about. In April, it was postponed to May. May, it was postponed to June. June, I got a form letter that did not mention Mark's name, didn't mention any of the things I talked about, and on the bottom of the letter was stamped. It was not even personally signed by President Obama. That shows me the contrast between those two men that have filled the role of Commander-in-Chief. President Bush was a real Commander-in-Chief. Obama's not.
Yeah, it's just despicable. I mean, I hear these stories all the time, and it's just a disgrace to the office of the presidency. It's a disgrace to our men and women in serving in uniform, and this commander-in-chief is a disgrace. And he's, I say it on the show all the time, and you know, people criticize me for saying this, but the man's a liar, a pathological liar, and he'll do anything and everything he can to stay in office and at the expense of our troops. So when he says, "I've got your back," he doesn't have their back. He's using them as a photo op. I think it's disgraceful that he went and gave a campaign speech to our troops. It's disgraceful that he uses them as a photo op, like he's somehow supporting them. He's not supporting them in any way. For example, he's going to be, by cutting the military, but expanding the executive branch. You know, his budget increases the size of the executive branch to an all-time new record high, and that is the executive branch will take in more of our budget money, if his budget were passed, if it were passed, than Medicare and Social Security combined. It'll be up in the like 1.4, 1.5 trillion range, whereas he's already taken half a trillion out of Medicare with Obamacare. At the same time, he's cutting the military. The military now will be less than half the size in terms of budget dollars than the executive branch. It's an outright disgrace, but it doesn't even end there. TRICARE. When he stands up there and says, "I've got your back," and yet he is looking to make active duty soldiers start paying out-of-pocket costs for their health care and the health care for their families. It's just an outrage and a total disgrace. I found a really good article on that's what's going on with this. It's called "Obamacare Will Sever Insurance for Veterans." And essentially what his policies are doing is driving veterans as well as soldiers out of the TRICARE system and into the government system, which we know
that's what he wants.
Really ugly. Yeah,
he wants
exactly.
The minimum Obamacare.
Yeah, he wants everybody on that. And so what's going to happen is there are going to be veterans that can't afford the out-of-pocket costs. So the only thing they're going to have to turn to is Obamacare, the government-mandated system, which is going to be a absolute failure for Americans and their health care. But if you live near a hospital, the VA hospital, my prediction is VA hospitals at some point, the government's going to say, you know what? Why do we need these expensive VA hospitals when everybody has free health care? Just go to a normal hospital and wait in line like everybody else, because you vets are really no different than everybody else. So I see that happening. But they also have a policy right now of trying to get more veterans utilizing military base facilities. Well, if you don't live near a military base, you can't use it. But at the same time, they're closing military bases. So this is all
so
meant to drive veterans. So when he says he's got their back, what he's really saying is, I've got a knife in your back, and I really don't care about your service to the country, and I don't care about you. It's just disgraceful. So,
I'm sick and tired of him using our military as ploys for his campaign, and that's all it is. He is just out there trying to get votes. If he really supported our family, I would have heard from him in the 4 years that he was in the office. Never heard from the man, never spoke to the man. You know, I lead several of the top military charities. If we really support the troops, why isn't he reaching out to the military charities that are, you know, conservative? Why is he only reaching out to the ones that are the liberal ones?
Right, yeah. Yeah, he's a very self-serving individual, and he's not got anybody's back but his own back, and that's quite obvious.
Yeah.
He's extremely transparent on that, although if you just watch the CNN sound bites, you'd think, well, that's the difference. What he says and what he does are two completely different things. Now, we have a very good friend, Joan Flowers, who was promised by the Clinton administration that her father, a World War II hero, buried in an unmarked grave in Chicago, would be interned and buried in Arlington. And then that never happened. So Clinton did the same sort of thing to one of our valiant World War II heroes. And now Joan has written numerous times to her congressman, senator, as well as President Obama, and gotten absolutely no response. Now, this is something that he could honestly make a photo op out of, because Joan's father was a black soldier in World War II. And the only reason I normally don't even mention it, but the only reason I mention this is because our black soldiers in World War II were discriminated against in the military and not treated real well. And yet, he, in just a short few years, rose from the ranks of private to warrant officer, and that's an amazing feat right there.
Wow,
and,
yes it is, yes it is.
And served under George Patton, and used to tell her stories when she was little about some of the things that went on over there, but he didn't get into too much detail, but she knows some of the theaters that he operated in, and then we were able to get, and it's very difficult because most of his records were lost in a fire in the early 70s
in the National Archives.
And so we were able to get enough things from his medals, and his rank when he was discharged, and where he operated. And it all pieced together. The stories that Joan has told me line up with the few military records that we've been able to piece together, and yet this administration doesn't care. Doesn't care, won't even respond to her. The Veterans Administration has said, this shouldn't be this way, and yet nobody can get anything done. And so it's an ongoing effort to try and get her father moved to Arlington, and we will succeed one day. But this just goes to show the lack of care.
I would love to try to help her. Send me her contact info, I'm up on the Hill, Moss. That's part of what else we do at America's Mighty Warriors is advocacy issues. When there's an injustice that relates to our troops, then we step in and try to make that right. So I would love to work with her, find out who she's reached out to, and, you know, get in touch with several of my contacts. I've got contacts with generals and admirals and
that would be awesome.
Too. So
I would love
to try to help her, but that's not right. That is just not right. And, you know, back to your comments about Obama. I mentioned the two different letters I had. And one of the things that irked me, I wanted to rip somebody's head off, was when we captured Osama. I don't know if you remember that speech that night that he gave. Of course, it was, blow me. He was brought in at the last minute of that, had no idea that mission was going on until when they told him it would have been too late for him to pull out. The from that speech that night, he says, I take to heart every one of those troops that we lose. And I personally sign a letter to each one of these Gold Star families. I'm like, you are so full of it. You don't sign a letter. That's a stamp on there that somebody else put. You never even read probably the letter that I sent or the letter you sent to me. It's a form letter. I had one of the SEALs that was killed in the helicopter accident came and stayed Christmas Day at the house for a week. And I showed her that letter when she was there, and she said, almost word for word, that's the same letter she got. So it's a form letter that he sends out. So for him to stand up on national TV and act like he cares, I have had it with the man, and we have got to get him out of there. He has a title, Commander-in-Chief, because that goes with the president, but he is not a Commander-in-Chief.
No, absolutely not. Well, you know, the thing that's really additionally disgraceful about all of this is, if you go and look at his daily, the White House publishes his daily schedule. He doesn't do anything before 10:30 in the morning. Not a thing. And the other day, all he did was get his daily briefing at 10:30, and then at 4 o'clock in
the
afternoon.
Golf course.
Yeah, met with Joe Biden, and probably on the golf course. But, like, why would anybody meet with Joe Biden? Joe Biden has the distinction of being the dumbest vice president in the history of our country.
Yes.
And that's
the
funny thing about it is, not only is he the dumbest vice president, but he also has the title of dumbest senator ever to serve in the history of our nation. So why would the president need to meet with a guy that's so dumb at 4 o'clock in the afternoon? Well, to have a martini and maybe, you know, go shoot a few hoops. But this guy is just a disgrace. He has no work ethic.
Yes.
He never has had any leadership experience, and it's very, very clear. Anybody in the military that's even still in the military that I know, look at this guy and go, what a creep. I mean, just an absolute creep. And Lloyd has written some great articles in recent time about you know, the president and his failing leadership, whether it be using the race card or class warfare. And then also, you know, Lloyd served in the military and can see that this guy doesn't care for the military, doesn't have their back, and is a disgrace to our military. And so I appreciate those articles he's been getting printed in the American Thinker. He's doing a fantastic job.
Yeah.
So where's the Tea Party Express going to be next?
We are headed to, let me see if I can find the schedule around here real quick. We're in Ohio, and I want to say we're at a rally in Ohio in the morning. That's not my responsibility to book them. I kind of get on the bus when they tell me to get on and get off the bus when they tell me to get off. But tomorrow we will be in, we'll be doing a rally in Madison, Indiana at 9:45. And at 3 p.m. we will be doing a rally in Corydon, Indiana. Never heard of the place, but we will be there tomorrow. And people can go to the website, teapartyexpress.org, and look and, you know, see where we'll be, where the rallies are located. And, you know, we go till May 8th. And would love to see people come out and just say hello. I'll be autographing books, and Lloyd will have his CDs here. You'll be able to hear him sing and me sharing Mark's amazing heroic story. We've got Diana Nagy, who's an entertainer who sings, and Jimmy Labriola, the comedian, who is on on Tim the Tool Man. He was the hardware guy. He comes out and entertains people. But all of us challenge people, you know, what we can do to make a difference in our country and take our country back. The title of our tour is Restoring America. And America as we see it today is not what our founding fathers intended for it to be.
No, absolutely not. Oh, that's what my show is. I'm going to plug it real quickly here, but the American Hour. And we generally broadcast on Wednesdays and Thursdays, same network as Michael Cutler here. You go to the website, usaradionetwork.com, and you can find all of the different broadcasters. And we focus a lot on the Constitution, and not just the history of the Constitution, but we talk about what's going on today and how it's being violated. And it's just, it's mind-boggling. It's absolutely mind-boggling that our government has no respect for the Constitution, which is the rule of law, which really ultimately means we don't have any rule of law. We are essentially living in a form of an anarchy. We abide by rules when we wish to, but when we don't wish to, we don't. And so the whole purpose of the rule of law is to protect our society and protect us as citizens. And so this president gets the award for the biggest violator of the Constitution in the last 100 years, and he does it on just about a daily, weekly basis. So, well, let's see. Is there anything else you want to tell people about your website one more time, Debbie? One more time. Tell us about your website.
Sure. It's America'sMightyWarriors.org. And, you know, as I said, a lot of what we do are advocacy things. When there's an injustice for the troops, we stand up and make it right. We try to educate people, whether it's in schoolrooms or through news media on Fox News regularly. We do support for our wounded warriors, for our troops coming home. One of the things Mark talked about in his last letter home, which I would encourage everybody to go to the website and read, literally that letter has changed and inspired millions of lives around the world. And he talks about, says to my family and friends, do me a favor, pass on the kindness, the love, the precious gift of human life. And he says we could change our world by doing more random acts of kindness. And so lots of times when I'm traveling and I see troops, as I did yesterday, I was in the airport and they were had backpacks, and I could tell they looked like military. I walked up and asked them if they're in the military, and they're getting ready to buy their ice cream. I said, this one's on me. And they said, no, ma'am, you know, and I had given them my hero card. And they said, no, ma'am, you don't need to do that. I said, no, I do. My son was the first Navy SEAL that was killed on Iraq, and he challenged me to pass on the love, the kindness, and I'm doing this in his memory. And bought them their ice cream. You know, I'll buy drinks if I'm, you know, somewhere where they're getting their drinks, or buy them a meal, or, you know, do those things in Mark's memory and to thank and honor them. And then, as I said, we do the camps for the Gold Star families. We've done events on Mother's Day for the Gold Star moms and Father's Day. We've done events at the ballpark. And, you know, I've got the Heroes Hope Home in Arizona where they can come stay free. And I've just dedicated my life. I do this 90 hours a week. I don't take a salary from the nonprofit. You know, this is all just out of the love of my heart. We always need people to support what we're doing so we can continue to make a difference in our troops' lives.
Well, Debbie Lee, you are a true American patriot, hero yourself, and, of course, the mother of Navy SEAL Mark Lee, a true American hero, war hero, and just hero in general. I want to thank you for your time coming on the show, and I know Michael Cutler, this show really appreciates having somebody like you come on and talk about something that is so important to our country. And one last question for you. How do you find the energy to do what you're doing?
You know, I often wonder myself, because as I said, I'm on the road about 70-80% of the time. I've been a widow for 18 years, so I don't have a husband. I'm leaving at home. My children are all grown, so there's not anybody I'm neglecting at home. But God's the one that gives me the strength every day to get up and to go and to make a difference and to keep going. And, you know, there are times when I get so tired, and sometimes I feel like I'm out in the battle by myself. And I know I'm not, but there are times when you feel that way. And I think about Mark. He didn't quit. He ran into the line of fire. And I raised him as a single mom. And if I taught him to do that, then how the heck can I quit? I've got to keep going. So his spirit and his story also motivate me to keep going. And it seems like just about the time I'm at one of those places where I think I'm done, I can't do anymore, and I'll get an email from a troop that I don't even know, that say, you know, either they heard me speak or they read something on the website and were inspired. I mean, I've even had some that have said they were thinking about ending their life, and after they heard me speak, you know, that changed their mind, or they, you know, went to the website for some odd reason and read about Mark and what I'm doing, and so then you're like, okay, I'm still making a difference. I got to keep going on. But, yeah, you know, when you're blessed to have a hero like that, people need to hear our hero's story, but challenge me to do this in his memory. So by doing these things, too, his memory lives on.
Well, Debbie, I know that Mark is down on you and is proud as any son could ever be of a mom. And, again, you're a true American. We love people like you and hearing these great stories. And God bless you. And just keep on going. We appreciate your time tonight. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. God bless you.
All right. Good night.
Bye-bye.
All right. Wow. How we're talking about my son or daughter in that way, I'd have, but maybe Debbie's had some practice, I'd have a hard time, you know, not being emotional. So I think we found Tramell. Jill, how
I'm
are you
here.
Tonight?
I am here. Speaking of moms and children, we had we had to deal with ours. And so we do what we do. I'm a friend with Debbie, and I know that she does her best every day to get up and do what she does. And she runs into all kinds of stumbling blocks and roadblocks, and she just perseveres on through it. And that's exactly what I did tonight. I'm glad to join you now. Thanks for having me.
We're glad to have you. Well, it was a great interview with Debbie, and she told us her story, and she's there at the Tea Party Express, and of course, our good friend Lloyd Marcus is the MC and provides the music and is a true American. I'm going to plug Lloyd one more time here. If you want to find out more about Lloyd Marcus, you can find him on Facebook, but of course, he on about a weekly or biweekly or so basis, it just kind of depends on when he's got to do it, and he's so busy. I don't know when he has the time, but he writes articles for the American Thinker. So if you go to American Thinker online, it's AmericanThinker.com. You'll find his articles, and he writes some great articles. What a great patriot he is. But so Jill, one of the questions I asked Debbie, and she had a great response. I'll give you a moment to think about it. Is today Obama at Fort Stewart talking to a group of troops and, of course, using campaign stump to tell them that he, via executive order, is not going to allow colleges and universities to prey on our veterans anymore. I don't know what he's talking about.
Yeah.
They're preying on our veterans.
Exactly. Yeah, no, no. So, I understand exactly what that's about. Yeah, I do. I do see that. And that's because of the GI Bill. That's an average veteran can basically pay a university tuition up to $17,500 a year.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So he's not going to let universities prey on our vets anymore, and so he's writing an executive order, which executive orders have to be based on law. In other words, he's saying how he's going to ensure that the law is carried out. I don't know what law he's referring to. I go and look at the executive orders that he writes, and he never references the law that he's utilizing to write an executive order.
Because he's abusing his power. I mean, let's just be real. The majority of the things that he's done has been in his backdoor, lame duck session, you know, taking something and twisting it and abusing his power. And that's what he does. And there is probably no law that says that, you know, Hodges University or ITS University or, you know, universities that help a lot of people who actually do good things for a lot of veterans, but there are some out there now that have been taking advantage of it and they're preying on them in regards to marketing. Well, I'm sorry. I think marketing is still like free speech. I mean, obviously we have CNN, so they can continue to do that.
Is he saying that our troops are too stupid to know they're being preyed on? When they're out there in the field, they're out there on the battlefield, they know they're being preyed on and they can handle themselves. But get them back here in the civilian world and they're just as dumb as a doornail, right? Is that what he's saying?
Yeah. Yeah, to some degree he is. And then in other ways, these people are preying on them. I've heard stories where – but they're not – you know, this is one thing. I'll just tell you this. That's a small problem. That's a drop in the bucket of all the real deal issues that we have with veterans. And for him to even talk about an executive order, why don't you make an executive order about, you know, the VA doing their job? Or the Army actually saying that when they debriefed somebody that he was just fine, and then you realize that he has such a massive concussion, he can't remember anything or anyone 4 months later and has shaking syndromes from, you know, tremors from brain damage, but they're not going to go back and reverse their briefing that he didn't have any traumatic brain injury. Those are the kind of things that, or military sexual trauma. I mean, the Democrats are all over that right now, and they should be, because it's an abomination. And for him to do nothing about those sort of things and write letters like Debbie receives, which is just a complete crap, then talk about doing this, that sounds to me like somebody is giving him a large political contribution from a legitimate college, for what he wants to call a legitimate college, versus somebody who has a privatized school that basically relies on student loans and financial aid.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well,
he's so transparent.
Yeah, what about the massive backlogs at the VA hospitals and the underfunding of our VA hospitals. Why does he do something about that? I mean, the appropriations, well, maybe not the appropriations, but the laws are in place to fund our VA hospitals. So write an executive order to ensure the money gets there. But no, that doesn't buy votes for him. That doesn't really get him anywhere. It's all about him. So today, right. The other thing he said was to the troops, and this is a quote, "I've got your back." Can you believe that crap? And when you consider that just a week or two ago, let's see, I've got the article right here. A week or two ago, his administration has proposed to, last week, the administration unveiled a plan to remake TRICARE that breaks the promise that he's made, that you'll get to keep your doctors, you'll get to go to the VA hospital, you'll get to, you know, have the VA and TRICARE treatments that has been promised to you. Most observers have focused on a proposal to raise premiums for military retirees, but it's not just retirees. It's active duty as well, out-of-pocket costs. So if you were injured in Iraq or Afghanistan and you come home and you need to see a specialist, you're going to have, under his proposal, out-of-pocket costs to pay for trauma that you received in the line of duty because, well, you know, it's only fair. I mean, you know, we can't have troops getting treated for free.
Well, you do see he actually flat out said that our military should be paying for their own health care.
Yeah, he did. I don't remember who in his administration said that, but said that, you know.
No,
hey,
he
what,
did.
What's the deal?
No, he did. He really did, well, he Tom. Did. He actually said it. Oh, yeah, he did it. I actually have the article. It was on my Facebook page for some time. It caused a little controversy. The funny part is it's the liberals that like to debate with me on my page. At some point, you know, when you're winning when they don't have anything but, you know, emotional baloney to throw at you. And that was one of those things that they were just kind of like, whoa, well, you know, in fact, maybe there's so many military that are taking advantage. I'm like, hello, if you were ever going to go into the military, if you were ever being recruited, which I was at one point for the Navy, I went through the entire process, okay? They give you promises, and that's how they recruit. They promise and promise and promise the world. And when you're, a 17 or 18-year-old kid who's trying to escape, and this isn't my situation necessarily, but that someone who's trying to escape, you know, poverty or loneliness because they don't have, you know, proper, because our social service system is going to hell in a handbasket as well. And that was something that I was dealing with all day today that I was hoping to have on the show, but in fact she chickened out because she has good right to chicken out. She's dealing with a entire system that she lives in a small county in Georgia that has been working against her that we figured out today since before she was born. And it's that corrupt in a small town. And it just goes on and on and on. And her husband is a veteran. And, you know, she's dealing with his medical issues. They're living on $2,000 a month and traveling back and forth paying for any type of neurological care they can get. And she says, I don't have it. I literally have stacked up bills that I can't pay that I know I'm going to have to file bankruptcy on because otherwise he won't get treatment.
Yeah.
Just where they force people. They force people there because they don't give the right diagnoses to start with. That systematically in the military, they've been forced to not diagnose TBI. And military sexual trauma is called PTSD. And they're lowering the benefits for those two things. Well, they're talking about increasing the benefits for TBI, but for PTSD, you know, it's really hard for someone to be 100% PTSD disabled these days. And then it takes them years, like the gentleman I just took to a UFC fight this weekend to make his dream come true, 100% PTSD disabled, only survivor as a team leader with his unit that went into a home that literally had, here's a story for you. This place, they're in Iraq. He's a team leader of a large unit, and they had already done surveillance. They didn't know where the terrorists that they were tracking actually went. They lost them. They lost them because they went underground. They had a 6-foot deep, half a mile wide tunnel dug under this house and literally went in there like a bomb shelter. But what happened was they went in, they broke into the house. You know, they busted into the house as a team. They found the floor was crumbling when they started searching, and one of the interpreters put his head down and looked down the tunnel and was blown away right in front of him. And then they opened up fire from other areas and killed his entire unit.
Wow.
He ran out. Yeah, it was horrible. He ran out, and then it just commenced. Like, a complete firefight commenced. Everyone figured out what was going on. They called in, you know, fire support, you know, air support, and he had to get out. At the same time, he wanted to get his guys out. He didn't want to leave his guys there because he didn't know who was dead and who wasn't for the most part. One lieutenant survived, actually, who got shot in the hands, and he tells this story in an amazing way. But, you know, this guy was given 100% PTSD disable rating, but had to fight for 2 years, broke while he was trying to stop himself from committing suicide, living with a father who was from Vietnam era, who was also suicidal and had PTSD. And the only people helping him were, you know, people like you and me that knew him, that were connected to other people that could occasionally bring in help, like help them get a trailer that they could live in, that he could own, so that he didn't have to worry about bills and had a car and food on his table. I mean, it's the basics that these people fight for.
Yeah.
Basic necessities of life. After they go through something like that, he was supposed to be given he got the Bronze Star with Valor. He should have had the Silver Star. He didn't get that. They said that he didn't have TBI at one point. He definitely has TBI. I've just spent 2, 3, 4 days with him. You know, these are the things that are wrong with our military, and they come from the highest levels, and they're done to save money.
Yeah.
And if we can't take care of our soldiers, regardless of why they're there, Vietnam era, today, yesterday, past, why in the hell would anyone want to volunteer to be a part of our U.S. military?
Well, yeah, as this goes on, it's only going to get worse. You know, 12% of Iraq and Afghanistan veterans live in poverty, and a staggering 30%
right.
are either unemployed or have stopped looking for work altogether. And Medicaid is their only TRICARE alternative. And if
right.
they happen to have, you know, within their family, a pension, you know, so they serve at least 20 years, and an income up to $32,000 a year, they would be required under Obama's plan to enroll in Medicaid if they forego
right.
TRICARE. And
right.
anyone earning above that will pay more. So there's a $3,000 cap on TRICARE out-of-pocket expenses. But if you make, I mean, to me, somebody making $32,000 a year and actually has a family, to me, you're really struggling to get by. And now if you get ill, you not only have to pay the $3,000 cap, you can pay above that under Obama's plan, and that's just
right.
disgraceful, absolutely disgraceful.
It's very disgraceful, and the thing that bothers me the most is that I watch this man systematically, and it's not just him. You know, we've got to realize this is an entire administration. It's the gangster government that he's brought in with him, and that's the problem. They are not making change for anyone but themselves and the elite and the 1%. And I can see why people get so bent out of shape about, you know, the Occupy movement and all of that is there for a reason. People are mad. The people that know what's going on with the you know, the feds and the whole entire monetary system, the world monetary system in general, Agenda 21. I mean, these are things people don't talk about, nor do they understand. And they've got the liberals thinking that, oh, Agenda 21 is so beautiful. It's such a wonderful thing. Basically, they're how would not want to increase the environment? Just in the last 2 days, you know, you have the EPA on tape, the heads of the EPA saying, we basically attacked these companies, you know, and made examples of them to assert their power and control.
Yeah.
And this is what's happened to our government. They are going to assert their power and control, and they are going to put us into a position where we don't have choices anymore. Another thing that's recently happened that I was not aware of, but that in 2013, if you are I do a lot of work with nonprofits, and there is a gentleman who's, you know, former military, he's a veteran, works at levels of generals and higher, you know, traveled with them to D.C. and became, you know, very wealthy doing his own federal contracts. And he just told me that he can't really give money after 2013 without it being just a straight up giveaway, because you can't write it off at certain levels anymore. And these are the large, these are the people that are funding everything that's doing what the VA is not, okay, with their personal money for the most part, through the charitable systems that we have. And for them to be told by the Obama administration that they can't give money without a write-off for those sort of things or anything like that anymore is literally saying, we're going to take over the system because we're not giving anybody else a choice anymore. There'll be no one else to help them, and we will bankrupt philanthropy so that the only choice is our governmental system, which is basically the VA system, and it's not going to get much better. So if people think that privatized healthcare, I mean, that healthcare in general, socialized healthcare is better, like from every place in the world that's ever had socialized healthcare has had an increase in suicide rates. If we think we have a problem now, think about what we'll be dealing with then. Plus, he's doing things that behind closed doors in lame duck sessions, and intimidating people with the IRS, the Secret Service, and other government agencies to where they feel like they're being attacked. And so anybody who's trying to be influential is being attacked by the governmental agencies. That's not a coincidence. You know, you've got that judge in Georgia who wasn't going to let him on the ballot because he wouldn't come and explain himself about the birth certificate, which we all know is a giant fake after they put so much research into it. You cannot deny that research.
Right.
You know, but is that on the national news? Hell no.
Right. Absolutely.
So it's systematic, Tom. It's really scary. And people like, that's why I support people like Debbie and the Tea Party Express and other people that I know who were leads. I'm just going to tell you this. If you've got the head of the Conservative Party since Reagan's administration, some of the heads over there, all they do, and it is no secret, David Keene, president of the NRA, has the ILA fund, which is run by Chris Cox at the NRA. Anyone and everyone who gives to that fund, it's no secret, that is the anti-Obama fund.
Okay. Good to know.
It is. It's the anti-Obama. It's anyone but Obama fund, and that's what they're doing with the money. So that's how bad it is, because it's not just about gun issues anymore. It's about freedom. It's about socialism. And people need to wake up and start talking about it. And at some point, a lot of us are like, you know, how much worse can it get for me if somebody wanted to come in and knock on my door? Like Ted Nugent. Ted Nugent was just approached by the Secret Service for, you know, and Michael Cutler and I were talking about this the other night. Yeah, words are like bullets. They do come out and you can't take them back. But when you're talking about the president and the things that he said were not a direct threat, they were basically foretelling what he sees happening. He was literally being a fortune teller. And it wasn't a direct threat. For him to have the knocks on the doors from the Secret Service and the IRS that he's had and being harassed now, bullshit. Andrew Breitbart's dead. He had tapes that he had given to Sean Hannity hours before the whole entire report from Arizona came out about the birth certificate being fake. Two of those two things together in the national news would have looked very damaging. The tapes apparently included Obama in situations that linked him to people that even his own party would be upset about from his college days.
And when are those tapes going to come out?
I have no idea. I have yet to talk. Like I was meaning to ask Debbie, because Debbie was a close friend of Andrew Breitbart, and Benjamin Smith, who's her spokesman, former Navy SEAL, who was a friend of Mark Lee's and is her spokesman. They are all privy to that kind of information, but at the same time, I think that Breitbart kept it so quiet because it was such damaging information that we know that it went to Fox. We just don't know where it's gone from there. And maybe it's been, maybe they have done it and I've somehow missed that. I don't know.
Well, I think what's going to happen is they have something really damaging. Hey, do what the Democrats always do. Wait until October. and then start playing it, you know, 24 hours a day. And that'll be the end of him. I think he's already toast now. But, you know, every time I see him get up on the in a platform somewhere and start talking about fairness and raising taxes, people aren't paying their fair share and on, something comes to mind I haven't seen anybody in the news talk about. You tell me what you think about this. But not only does the Eighth Commandment tell us not to steal, and I think most Americans claim to either be Christian or Jewish, and they don't know the vast majority. And so we all believe in the Ten Commandments, and God has laid out, you know, the very basics for us with the Ten Commandments. But the Eighth Commandment says, thou shalt not steal. But the Tenth Commandment makes it clear, don't even think about stealing. And so the way it's phrased is, thou shalt not covet.
Right.
In other words, covet means desire. Thou shalt not desire your neighbor's house, nor anything that is your neighbor's. And every time this president speaks, he's coveting other people's property. He's violating the Ten Commandments. He's violating the Tenth Commandment, and he clearly doesn't care. He doesn't care. He's committing a sin by coveting other people's stuff. And he claims in the fairness, but God never talked about fairness. God said, you live your life, and you live it right, and don't be sitting there thinking about how you can get other people's stuff. And that's what this president is all about, taking people's stuff. So coveting is the desire. The action to actually fulfill that covet is to then steal, and that's what he's talking about, is stealing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's going to steal the American taxpayer dollar. He's going to steal what has basically generated the charity system, you know, all charitable contributions in this country that has created an amazing secondary source that is the only thing that fills in the gaps in the continuum of care, especially for our veterans. You know, and everybody else in the social work system and in the foster care system is just absolutely a train wreck. I mean, I've spent 16 years or more, and now if you want to count all these years advocating for veterans and what I've learned doing this, I've spent, you know, 20 years in the social work system trying to figure out how people can get what they need. And I'm constantly banging my head against the wall because, number one, the government's money is spent in all the wrong, like the EPA, shut that shit down. I'm sorry. I was used to be the environmental reporter and the Earth Club president at my junior college back in the day. And I understand we have to take care of our environment, but there's not going to be a world that anybody's going to want to live in if it continues in the rate that we've been going and if we don't divert our funding elsewhere to more important projects. I mean, get rid of the EPA. I hope they just proved that in the last 2 days. And then we've got, you know, the gun smuggling and the just the corruption at the whole Fast and Furious, and now you know, with the grenades, it's obvious we've had corruption for years and years and years. And I know many whistleblowers that have had personal losses, like, you know, family members having heart attacks as they were zip tied by ICE agents on the front porch. I mean, these people have abused power forever. And they will not ever take responsibility. They will do it in the name of their job, which, you know, this is our governmental system. This is also military problems. This is something that is never going to change. The government itself needs to be smaller. That's the bottom line. Privatized things work better because people are held accountable and there's someone else with a bid right behind them to change them out.
Yeah.
But forget it.
Debbie and I were talking earlier about the size of government, and I was pointing out that in Obama's proposal, which not even one Democrat budget proposal voted for, but for the first time in 50 years, the executive branch will be bigger than both Medicare and Social Security combined, and it will be more than double the size of the military. So when he says to the troops, I've got your back, I guarantee you there were some soldiers in there that don't want to leave the military but are going to be forced out with the budget cuts to the military that he has proposed. And so
absolutely.
But there's not going to be one bureaucrat in the executive branch that's going to be out of a job because his proposal doesn't cut the executive branch in any way or any jobs. It actually grows it under his proposal. So in other words, government is more important than our military and national security. But he's got
of
their back.
It is. Right. No, that's absolutely part of a major plan, a larger plan. And if people want to think that this man isn't smart enough to think about how he could take over the world, you know what? They don't know who they're dealing with.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Well, tell people where they can find out more about you and your company and the projects that you're involved in.
Oh, thanks. Well, I have a company, Patriot Promotions. You can find me, my blog is at patriotpromotions.wordpress.com. And truly, I am a consultant. I do work within the military helping inventors and investors meet and link together. My nickname, they call me now, I'm the networking ninja.
Okay.
But so I'm doing consulting work also for nonprofits. And additionally, I've been dealing with some marketing with major corporations, kind of tying them in with patriots and military initiatives so that they can help. You know, what we need to do is, as a capitalist country still, as long as we can be before our economy crashes, you know, we got to band together, work together, and make sure that the money that we're making or the nonprofits that we're supporting are doing the actual work. And I only work with patriots and friends. So it takes a lot sometimes for me to get on board, but when I'm on board with something, we try to make things happen, and we make it so that we can all be influencing others to make the right choices and to realize what's going on for the changes that we need to make. And it's difficult. It's almost like I feel there's this huge grassroots movement that's there. It's called the Tea Party, but they've tried to villainize people who are just patriots and friends. And that's really all we are. I mean, we're going to vote anti-Obama regardless, because we understand where our country's headed and we believe in the Constitution and the founding principles. You don't have to label anybody that feels that way. It just is what it is. It's like Michael, we talked. We hate labels. But at the end of the day, we use it for debate purposes. And I think that it's our job now to just start educating anyone, regardless of the label, of what is to come if we don't make this change. And if Romney thinks that he's going to get in there and not be scrutinized, well, then, you know, he's mistaken. So, or whoever else makes it to the White House. Because it's time for the American people to start talking about civic life and doing something about it at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. All right, awesome. Well, what else? Is there anything else we need to cover here before we wrap it up?
I want to tell people about a couple organizations that I've worked with lately that I'm very proud of. I like to give plugs and props to those who are doing the real work out there, because I do have a bone to pick with some of the bigger brands that say they're helping our warriors, but in fact just take giant salaries, and you can check 990s on those. But one of my friends that I recently met reached out to me for some assistance and some direction, and he is Greg Amira, very interesting fellow. I'd like to have him on the American Hour sometime, or Mike's show. He was working with another large organization for some time, and he quit working there and started his own deal about a year ago called WoundedVets.org. He's out of Tampa. Greg's a really interesting guy in that he was working for Merrill Lynch and was in the towers when they were hit. He literally had to – he was in the towers and they were hit. He literally had to go through all of that and emotionally and lost a lot of friends. And there was a photographer actually who took his picture – and he was only 60 yards away from him when he took the picture, and one of the towers toppled on top of him, and the photographer died. And the pictures are still remaining that were digital, and they survived, and the last picture he took was of Greg.
Oh,
and Greg then went in. He was one of the first in, re-upped his enlistment in the Army, and went back to Iraq. He was one of the first in Iraq. And he was then wounded twice in Iraq. So he's a combat wounded warrior from Iraq, and he's also lived through the towers. He's the only one we know that's done that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Amazing.
And he's
amazing story.
Yes. He's leading the TBI research right now. He's doing everything he can with TBI research. He's at the doctor's office, you know, half the day every day. And I'm just really proud to know people that continue to try to help other veterans when they're going through that kind of stuff themselves. So woundedvets.org, great organization. You know, we need people to donate to Debbie's organization. Keep her on the road. She's the voice of the people. That's my life right now. I'm basically pushing forward what I can in social media and in communications and media outlets, anywhere I can, to tell them about the people that are doing the good works. And they don't pay me to do it. This is my volunteer stuff. So, you know, it leads to the other things, the consulting work that is paid. But the rest of it, it's just the right thing to do. And sometimes when you do the right thing, it pays off for everybody.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well, that's awesome.
Yeah.
All right, Jill.
Thank you, Tom. Thanks.
It's been a pleasure as usual, and we'll be in touch, and we'll keep up the work on these issues and leading the charge on informing people, especially on the veterans issues. And so I always like doing that, and I think this would be a unique show for the Michael Cutler Hour, talking so much about veterans issues tonight. But I know that Michael appreciates that, and he is a big supporter of the troops. And of course, he served his country quite valiantly as an INS officer in a dangerous capacity for 30 years. So.
Absolutely.
I think ties in well.
Yeah, I want to give Michael some props because, you know, he's really dedicated. He's like Debbie Lee in that he's really dedicating his life out to educating people on the real issues and what's really happening, because our mainstream media just doesn't give it the time that it deserves, or half the time doesn't tell the truth. So when you've got people like Michael out there talking, people really need to go and listen and hear it. I would love to see him on a college circuit, you know, changing lives from the college level, because I remember being back in college and hearing some things that were absolutely the opposite of what the government was talking about or the media was portraying. And when you really hear it from the horse's mouth like Michael's, you really, it changes lives. It makes you stop and think, what can I do next? So, you know, all we can do is support everybody that's doing those right things. And I want to say Michael's really, really doing that. So I'm proud to be on the show in any capacity. Thanks.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we'll plug Michael's stuff one more time. Go to CAPSWeb, CAPSWeb.org, CAPSWeb.org. That stands for Californians for Political or Population Stabilization. And he's the senior fellow there, and he's got a lot of great articles there. His new TV show is on TalkBorder.com, part of the AND magazine. They approached him and wanted to have him do a weekly TV show. So go to TalkBorder.com, and, of course, his website is MichaelCutler.com. And I want to throw a couple things out that I know he will appreciate. If you go to the Center for Immigration Studies, it's CIS.org. They have a great article on the high cost of cheap labor, illegal immigration, and the federal budget. It outlines precisely why amnesty will raise our costs, why illegal immigration today is costing us billions and billions of dollars, and amnesty will only jack that cost up. You think, well, they'll be paying taxes, but they'll have access to so much more services, and the vast majority of illegal immigrants have very low education, and they're not going to get a significantly better job, and they're certainly not going to make much more money than they are now. So it will significantly increase our costs. And then on the American Thinker, a great article that came out yesterday, the matricular consular, the only card an illegal immigrant would need, and this is a identification card issued in Mexico that is being utilized in places like Cook County, Illinois, a sanctuary environment, to be official identification for all purposes, and also is going to open the door for them to vote. Illegal immigrants able to vote because they have an ID that is accepted by Cook County, Illinois. These identification cards aren't accepted in Mexico. They can't be used in Mexico, and it certainly couldn't be used to get a loan or anything else in Mexico, but we have counties and states in this country that are accepting them at the expense of you and I, Jill, and it's just ridiculous. So go check that out on theamericanthinker.com, the matricular consular, and that is the identification card issued by the Mexican government being accepted in this country as valid identification. And one of the cards that the guy who wrote this talked about, it showed that the individual was born in a city in Illinois that doesn't even exist.
Oh.
So I know it's and then we've got Eric Holder saying, oh, what a bunch of baloney that is. So
well,
anyway.
Holder, hopefully Holder won't be there for long. Let's just hope that Daryl Issa plugs and props for Daryl Issa. I love him. He's from my hometown of Vista, California. Go Daryl. Keep it up.
Yeah.
Let's just get rid of Holder. Let's get rid of him and move on to the rest of them. And, you know, it's basically how we're going to have to take down the government one problem at a time.
Absolutely. So when Obama loses, folks that have been involved in the administration or campaign, yeah, because they're brother. They're going to be written, are going to be unbelievable about corrupt,
Yeah, people thought it was back in Bush. Just think about the people that thought it was bad when Bush was in office. That's why those funnies are circulating that Bush is like, miss me yet?
Yeah, it's still out there. Absolutely. All right, Jill, well, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for being on the show and helping out Michael tonight, who's on the road. And Michael will be back next week, Friday night, 7 p.m., right here. And, of course, you can always go download the archives, go to his page on usaradionetwork.com. I think you can also he's also got a link on his website, michaelcutler.net. You can download past shows. He's got some great shows, and you don't want to miss any of those. So appreciate that. All right, Jill, have a great night. Stay with the family.
Thanks, Tom. You too. Thanks, everyone.
You've been listening to the Michael Cutler Hour on the USA Talk Radio Network.